A wonderful, thank you. What a wonderful opportunity we, each one of us, have gifted to ourselves by being on retreat at this time of year. I personally love this opportunity to stop. Well, for I went home. I went back to Dublin for Christmas, and it was fairly full on, and in lovely ways. It was busy and it was sociable. And this is such a wonderful contrast. And maybe you've had a similar experience of leading up to the festive season, a very hectic time. And now you've given yourself the opportunity to pause and perhaps experience some spaciousness. So it's a different use of our minds, isn't it? It's like rather than all the to-do lists being completed, all the problems being addressed, having that very goal orientation, that narrow focus to get things done, you've put that aside for at least a short period. Hopefully you've had, through the meditations that we've done so far, an opportunity really to drop into your body. And now, in the midst of this retreat, now we're kind of past a halfway stage, and hopefully we've found some level of stability and peacefulness even. And an opportunity to turn towards our experience. At what is obviously conventionally a point in the year when many people review, if you listen to the radio or any of the news at the moment, people are reviewing all the goings on this past year. And you can do this at any point during the year, but there's something about the transition, isn't there, from the old to the new, from the old year to the new year? It is conducive to review, and we can use this period of less activity, of reduced activity, to do just that, to turn with curiosity towards our experience, both our present experience and the experience of the last year. And that starts with acknowledging where we're at, acknowledging and indeed accepting where we're at. Perhaps this is one of the greatest messages of meditation. It's a process of acknowledging where we are in this moment, this present situation, and accepting it. So recognizing our blessings, recognizing the good things, those things that we enjoy. And of course, Buddhism teaches us that we need to enjoy these good things through a certain lens, the lens of impermanence. To enjoy our blessings, but without getting attached to them. It's our habitual response to get attached, to cling, to grasp, isn't it? At least the pleasant aspects of our experience. We experience pleasure and we think, I want more of that. Thank you very much. And Bodhilila has gone into Vedana, those assessments, those, if you like, very gut level assessments that we make of our experience, immediate assessments. I like it, I don't like it, pleasant, unpleasant. And obviously the danger with the pleasant is our habitual response. If we don't bring the light of awareness to that experience of the Vedana, the hedonic tone, the pleasantness or unpleasantness, we cling. We cling to what we find pleasant in the face of impermanence. We cling on. If you're like me, you cling on for dear life to some of the more pleasant experiences. and crave. We crave what we don't have. We grasp. We're trying to cling on, reach out and grasp whatever it is we don't have. And of course, we saw in the second noble truth that we looked at yesterday that craving is the basis of suffering. So herein lies the difficulty of the human predicament. We rather than just enjoying our blessings, we attach to them. We resist the fact that they are impermanent. We crave, and that causes suffering. So in effect, attachment is resistance. It's non-acceptance of our experience. And impermanence is just one of, you could say, the most immediate result or implication of dependent origination, that basic principle that we've been looking at over the past few days. This being that becomes, from the arising of this that arises, this not being that ceases, from the ceasing of this that ceases. What that means is that all our experiences are interconnected. They're conditioned. They arise on the basis of conditions. All our experiences arise on the basis of a whole web of conditions. Bodhilila went through some examples, you know, even just you being here now on this session, at this session. Yeah, you have to have electricity, you have to have your laptop in functioning order, you have to have your breakfast this morning. You need to breathe the quality air. So many conditions, and each one of those conditions depends on a further set of conditions. We are here at the center of this web, vast web of conditions that's behind us just being here now. When we remove any of those conditions, then that the phenomenon on which depends on those conditions ceases. Whatever comes together must fall apart. So impermanence is, if you like, built into reality. It's the prime implication of dependent origination. And if we can turn towards impermanence rather than resist it, if we can turn towards our suffering, that those aspects of our experience that arise as a result of impermanence, without aversion, this is the key potential, if you like, the potential of our being of is to turn towards our suffering without aversion. And of course there is the irony that turning towards the unpleasant, pushing it away, again it's a natural instinctive response to that unpleasant vedana, the unpleasant hedonic tone, that unpleasant gut assessment of any situation, is to push away the unpleasant. I don't want that. And the irony is that the desire to avoid the suffering leads to suffering, causes more suffering. So, for example, you know, the fear at losing possessions, the fear of my laptop breaking down, which one day it will do, actually causes anxiety. The desire to avoid losing my laptop actually causes anxiety, causes fear. Or holding back from opening myself up to other people because maybe I fear being vulnerable. That fear of rejection causes me to be isolated causes me to be lonely. So the movement to avoid suffering actually causes suffering. Another way we have of describing this is that what we resist, the suffering, the unpleasant, persists. And we all experience this, I'm sure, when we push something down in our meditation, when we resist a recurring emotion, if we try and distract ourselves from it, it will just pop up again and again. Or even physically, you know, what we resist persists. If we are feeling pain somewhere in our bodies, discomfort, and we try and resist that rather than acknowledging it and breathing into it, if we resist it, we just generate more tension. And that tension can simply exacerbate the pain. So turning towards our experiences is what we have an opportunity to do. Acknowledging, accepting, and accepting, you know, acceptance can be misunderstood. This is not a passive acceptance, not the acceptance, for example, of an injustice. It's not being quietistic. Buddhism is very much about changing what needs to be changed, whether it's aspects of ourselves, our habits, our views, our assumptions, our unhelpful assumptions about our own limitations. These all need to be changed. But there are certain things which we just cannot change just like that. So accepting what cannot be changed. And of course, cultivating the wisdom to know the difference between what can be changed and what cannot be changed. So turning towards our experience, acknowledging and accepting is very much a starting point for change, because we can only start from where we are, from an understanding of our own characteristics, a sense of knowing ourselves. If we're to act in the world, we need to know where we're starting from. If you like, this is an alternative, a strategy to change. Accepting, turning towards, acknowledging is the beginning of the possibility of change. And this is very much the message. This possibility of change is very much the message of the second noble truth. We were looking at the four noble truths briefly yesterday. The second noble truth is that the cause of suffering is craving. So this is good news in a very real sense, because this means that the cause of suffering is in the mind. And this is one of the Buddha's key insights. The cause of suffering is in the mind. As it says in the Dhammapada, one of the earliest collections of writings of the Buddha, experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. So the cause of our suffering comes from within. It's an internal response to external conditions. And this is good news, because we have at least some control over our minds. As we were investigating yesterday, we've far less control over external conditions. We've absolutely no control over what we've already experienced in life. You know, our past conditioning, you know, our parents, our schooling, the culture that we've grown up in. These we did not choose these. These were givens. And we're not free for ongoing conditions, you know, like that. These are often phrased in Buddhism in terms of the eight worldly winds of pleasure and pain, success and failure, fame and infamy, praise and blame. You could say fame and infamy are just versions of praise and blame. Maybe praise and blame is the more immediate pairing that we experience on a day-to-day basis. I suppose fame and infamy are more about status, are the opposite of status. For example, when we're criticized, that's sense of feeling small that arises, humiliated. So Buddhism presents these four pairs, if you like, as one way of describing the uncontrollable aspects of the world. And we can think back in this year, you know, how many aspects of our experience were just outside of our control, starting with the big picture of the world, the war in Ukraine. None of us could have, obviously we might have been able to see some of the signs, but who knows? It was so uncertain, wasn't it, that who could have foreseen that at the end of February Russia would invade Ukraine? And then we've had all the uncontrollable results, at least from our perspective, you know, the fuel price rises, the food price rises. What arose from that was inflation. On the basis of inflation, we have quite legitimate demands for pay increases, I think, and strikes. So journeys, as Bodhilila was describing, you know, journeys disrupted. All of this, if you like, web of conditionality has risen, and we have, each one of us individually, very little control over that. And maybe locally, you know, in your life, maybe there have been uncontrollable factors. Those worldly winds blowing on a more personal level. Maybe you've experienced loss. Your electricity bills, your gas bills, perhaps have shot through the roof, so you've less disposable income. Maybe health. You know, gain and loss, pleasure and pain. Maybe you've lost some aspect of your health, or maybe you've experienced the pain of some illness. Maybe your family situation has been painful in some way. Maybe relationships have been strained. Maybe there's been praise or blame in your more immediate relationships, whether it's work or family. These are described as worldly winds. Winds kind of blow as they will. None of us have control over the winds of our day-to-day existence. However, the good news is that suffering, these do not imply suffering. These do not inexorably lead to suffering. There is an aspect of our experience that is under control, crucially. So we can change our minds. Viktor Frankl, you might be familiar with him. He's written a few books. The Will to Meaning is one of them. Man's Search for Meaning is another. He experienced the worst, most hellish aspects of human nature in a concentration camp. And he survived. He was a psychotherapist, psychologist. Anyway, one of his quotes was that human from the Will to Meaning. Human freedom is no freedom from conditions, but rather freedom to take a stand on whatever conditions might confront them. So freedom is about taking a stand on whatever conditions we might be confronted with. So we can take a stand in the face of all those conditions, all those worldly winds blowing. We can take a stand. We can change our minds. So rather than the absolutely futile strategy of trying to change external conditions, control external conditions completely, in other words, changing the world to suit our personal needs, we can change our desires so that we are in line with reality. We can change our habitual responses to our experience of those worldly winds. So, for example, if we're criticized, obviously we can try and deflect the blame. Maybe this is sometimes, certainly for me, an automatic response. I'll try and deflect the blame when I'm criticized. I might hit back. I might suffer a collapse in self-esteem. Or if I can bring some mindfulness to the situation, and rather than simply kicking back in that knee-jerk response, I can perhaps, when I'm criticized, accept the responsibility for whatever I'm being criticized for. Maybe I can respond with patient forbearance. Maybe I can hold on to my sense of confidence. So we can, by bringing awareness to our situations, our experiences of the Vedana, the hedonic tone, the pleasure and the pain, by coming in there with awareness, shining the light of awareness, bringing consciousness to the situation rather than responding with knee-jerk responses, we can change our habits. And that's crucial. That might sound like a small thing, but we can change our habits, not just the habits, those automatic knee-jerk response habits, but also the habits of mind, like our views, our rote ways, perhaps, that we've been given and accepted passively from our culture, from society, our views, our assumptions about the world and our place in it. So Buddhism is a very positive, optimistic approach to the fact that we can change our minds. This is possible. We have agency, the possibility of agency in the face of the worldly winds. We can choose. If we bring awareness to our knee-jerk responses, if we can bring awareness to those feelings, the Vedana, the pleasure and the pain, if we can, in that light of awareness, if we can measure our response against the precepts, the ethical precepts that Buddhism offers. So the Buddha, if you like, as a coach, as a friend, he gives us advice as to how to be happy, and he presents these in the form of the five precepts, guidelines for us to apply to those, exactly those situations of experiencing pleasure or pain. You know, and if we can just pause and consider our responses in the light of those precepts, the precepts of kindness, of generosity, of contentment, of truthfulness or authenticity, of mindfulness or awareness, cultivating awareness. If we can consider our responses in the light of those precepts, then we can break the unhelpful limiting habits that we have, and we can change ourselves and change the world for the better. So the Buddhist path, one could describe as learning to respond in these situations, to respond appropriately. There was a major Chinese Chan master called Yunmen. He was alive in the 9th century in China during the Tang era. A student came up to him and asked him, what is the fruit of a lifetime of practice? And Yunmen's considered response was two words: responding appropriately. And this, if you like, is what Buddhist ethics is about: responding appropriately. This is the route to alleviating suffering of the world, our own suffering and the suffering of others. And of course, those are intimately bound up with each other, our own suffering and the suffering of others. Shantideva put it beautifully. I think he summarized this non-separation between our happiness and the happiness of those around us, the alleviation of our suffering and the alleviation of the suffering around us, in a simple passage which I'll quote. All those who suffer in the world do so because of their desire for their own happiness. All those happy in the world are so because of their desire for the happiness of others. I repeat that. All those who suffer in the world do so because of their desire for their own happiness. All those happy in the world are so because of their desire for the happiness of others. Okay, so we have an opportunity now to do a bit of reflection. So I invite you to adopt a posture, a comfortable posture. Just we'll spend about 10, 15 minutes reflecting. Dropping into our bodies just to start with. Noticing whatever is there and acknowledging that and accepting that. Can we relax into our experience? And as we settle into our bodies, into our senses, into the here and now, maybe we notice our breathing, the sensations of breathing. Noticing where we feel the breathing most, the movements, sensations associated with the breathing. And we use our experience of the sensations of breathing as an anchor to help settle us. Calm our minds. I love the image of the still lake. As a metaphor for the calming mind. So I'm going to ask a few questions which you can treat as stones that you throw into this still lake. Allow the stone to break the surface and sink down through the lake, through the depths of the lake, towards the bottom. So, thinking back on the past year, what have been your experiences of success? And what was your response? How did you respond to that experience of success? Over the past year, what have been your experiences of failure? And what was your response to your experience of failure? And over this past year, what has been your experience of pleasure? Any major events that you can recall of pleasure? And what was your response to that experience of pleasure? And have you, over the past year, had experiences of pain? That stand out for you. And what was your response? In the past year, have you had experiences of praise? And how did you respond? Have you had experiences of blame in the past year? And what was your response? And where does this reflection, remembering, consideration of these experiences of success and failure, pleasure, pain, praise, blame, where does that leave you now? How has that landed with you now? Notice what's going on for you. And whatever is going on for you, can you bring a sense of open-hearted, kind, compassionate sensitivity to whatever you're feeling now? And can you, if needed, bring a sense of forgiveness towards others, towards yourself in all these reflections. So I invite you now to bring your attention back to your breathing, the in-breath and the out-breath, the sensations associated with the breathing. So it would be useful, I think, now if we just break up into breakout groups for a quarter of an hour. Smaller groups, maybe 3-4 people in each group. And I invite you to share in as much as is comfortable for you to share from your experience of reflecting on the year in terms of those 8 worldly winds, the pleasure, the pain, the success, the failure, the praise, the blame. So if we can set up groups now, I know it'll take a minute or two. What I suggest is just setting them up automatically. So when we have our invitations, we can break up into groups and just share anything that struck you out of that reflection that, again, feels comfortable to share. So I'm not sure who's setting up the groups.
Oh. Right, Nadeva, I'm just having a go of it now. I've never tried it with manual. I thought I usually do it manually. I thought automatic would be quite
Okay, no worries, Amanda. Sorry to land that on you. Let me do it. I'll close all that. No worries at all.
Thank you.
I'll create.
Thank you, writing it over.
No problem at all. Okay, so hopefully the invitation will come your way just now. Would you prefer, Sheena, not to go into a group? Or are you happy to join a group? No worries. Thank you. Thank you. So welcome back, Sheena and Natalie. The briquette rooms are just about to finish.
Thank you.
In the first stage, we focus on ourselves, wishing ourselves well. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be free from suffering. May I be fulfilled, at ease in the world. At ease with my gains, my losses, my experiences of praise and blame, of pleasure and pain, fame and infamy. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. Bringing to mind a good friend, making them as vividly present as we can. Perhaps imagining their face, their voice. Bringing to mind their good qualities. Their achievements, and wishing them well. May they be well, may they be happy, may they be free from suffering. bringing to mind somebody we don't have strong feelings towards. Maybe we've just encountered them one off, seen them in the distance, being served at the checkout by someone, perhaps. Spotted someone on the tube. So someone we don't have any strong emotional connection with. We bring them to mind in as much as we do know them. We know they share our humanity. They want to be happy just like us. And we wish them well. May they be happy. May they be well. May they be free from suffering. So extending our well wishing now even further to include someone we find difficult, someone who challenges us. Again, trying to bring them as present, as vividly present as we can. Trying not to see them through the lens of the difficulty between us. They are so much more than that. And we wish them well. May they be well and happy and free from suffering. I invite you to bring to mind the four people you've considered in this meditation: yourself, the friend, the neutral person, the difficult person. And explore the possibility of an unbiased well-wishing towards each. A well-wishing that's not conditioned by what you get from them. Then bringing to mind everybody in our virtual Sangha here today, and those who have joined the retreat but aren't able to be here just for this session. May we all be well and happy and free from suffering. Broadening out to include anybody else in the buildings we're inhabiting. May they be well and happy and free from suffering. Then allowing your well-wishing to extend like a circle of loving kindness spreading across the land, the town or city you're in, bringing in, including more and more people, and including non-human persons, animals, birds. May they all be well and happy and free from suffering. Gradually extending across the globe, including people in places of war, in places of peace, those who are healthy and those who are ill. May they all be well and happy and free from suffering. Knowing no limits to your well-wishing, extending across the whole of the globe, to every nook and cranny, and beyond, into this universe. May all beings, wherever they may they be happy, may they be well, may they be free from suffering. So take your time to transition from the meditation. Introducing some gentle movement when the time seems right for you. It's been a real pleasure to spend the morning with you as we head towards the new year. And I hope to see many of you again if you can make it for the afternoon session at 3:30. I hope you have the opportunity to hold on to a bit of silence and reflection and peaceful sense of well-wishing towards yourself in all these reflections and assessments of the year just gone. Keep well and see you shortly.
Can I just add that we do have an extra session today? So as well as the 8 o'clock session, for those of you who are up for it, we're going to be seeing in the new year with a session from 11 o'clock till about 12:15.